What's up, everyone? 65 Lokes here, and welcome back to another episode of Skill Riders Podcast. This is episode 96 with my guest, Tony Johnson, known as Fab Kings, also part of LUGK, and based out in Texas. Let's go ahead and hit up Tony. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, Tony? How you doing?
Pretty good.
Nice, man. Thank you. Welcome to Scale Riders Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Dude, I've been noticing you've been like super busy and active lately. Well, not lately, for the longest, man.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
I'm trying to think where do we even begin? It's like I see you're working on something, and then next you know it's like some weeks later, then it's like a progression pick, and then it's done. I'm like, what the heck? And then there's another car, and then another car, and then the most recent, you posted up those 58s, like a lineup of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just what the heck? Like, dang. Like, here come more.
Oh, yeah. They're coming.
That's crazy.
I got a lot of replicas, and I took a few commission bills, but I'm trying to thin out all the projects. Trying to thin down the backlog of projects that I have I'm working on.
Yeah. And it's crazy because not only, I mean, do you do the models, but you also like produce music too?
Yes, sir. I do. I do music. I mix music. People send me projects. I do custom production. I do a lot of different stuff. And I got two YouTube channels that I try to run too.
Yeah, dang. Do you kind of find like similarities in a way? Like when you're, you know, like the mindset, like when you're doing the models, the progress of all that, and then the music production?
Yeah, it's kind of the same because if I touch a model when I'm not in the mode, with model car mode, I'll mess something up. And it's the same with music. If I'm not in music mode, I don't feel it, I stay away from it. I'll mess something up. So it's pretty much the same as far as, you know, how I get to work on stuff and like how I complete stuff.
Yeah. Do you ever find an issue like, you know, being into one thing and then taking a break on it and then moving on, or do you kind of just balance both around the same time?
My building desk and my production desk are like next to each other. They form an L in the corner. So I just spin from chair to from I sit in one chair and I spin from desk to desk to, you know, and I transition from doing cars to doing some music, or I get, you know, if I got stopped doing the music, I do some cars again. So yeah, I stay in between both of them.
Oh, that's dope. That's pretty cool. Yeah, even for me, it's kind of tough. Like I tried doing that switching off back and forth with working on stuff, but I have to like stick to one for a while and kind of take a break from the other, because I feel like I don't put all the attention into it. Sometimes it gets harder for me.
Same here. Okay, say for instance, if I'm working on building some cars, right? If I start noticing myself letting things pass that I can see that can be picked apart, I stop. Mm-hmm. And I get away from it, because I know if I come back to it first, I'll be like slapping myself upside the head. Like, why would you let that pinhole go? Like, do you want to go to a show and have David and them poking fun at you, saying, oh man, look at that? And JC will be like, oh man, look at that. You messed that up right there. So it's like, I'm not going to do that. I'll just stop and I'll come back to it when I got the mind state to correctly finish it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's something. Like sometimes I miss it. I'm like, man, I want to work on music and stuff, and then it's kind of like, no, I don't want to dive into the world right now. I kind of want to like stick to this. Still,
yeah, it's a balance, man. You know, what makes you have to do it? Let's say if you got paid to do a music project, or if you got paid to do a model project, it's kind of like changing. Then you can't just do it whenever you feel like. You have to put some sort of deadline with it, because, you know, you don't want to make people mad at you. You want them to come back.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And
oh yeah.
And so let's kind of start from the beginning. Like, I wanted to know, like, like at what age or when did you get exposed to model cars? Like, when is it when you just like started to be active with the model cars?
I would say around, I was probably 11 or 12 and I was in Shreveport, Louisiana, visiting my grandparents, and they had a Piggly Wiggly store and we used to go in there, and that's the first time I've ever seen a Lowrider magazine. It was in the 90s. It was around the time that Loco 6-4 was on the cover. So I got that, and that right there opened up the doors for me to, you know, really get into the cars. And then I found Lowrider Bike magazine in there. Got the Lowrider Bike magazines. Found Bear Garcia's video with the famous VHS video with the bed dancing truck in it and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And from there is when I really got into really trying to build. And I learned how to solder, and I built a bed dancer back when I was like 12 or 13. And we was doing competitions and all. And I got with some more guys. I was in Kansas. I got with some more guys out there. And we got really into it.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's how I started.
Yeah, and
yeah, that was the beginning.
Yeah, and you know how you brought up that Bear Garcia VHS? I heard that that's like such a hard to find, a rare piece right there of a VHS.
I would pretty much guarantee if you were able to find that video,
mm-hmm.
even Bear Garcia is looking for one. So I'm pretty sure that video is worth its weight in something.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. If they made it on eBay, I'm pretty sure that video would not be cheap.
Yeah, it'd probably be a lot for that.
Oh, yeah. I think you had to, like, order it at the magazine or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had to order it, like, call a number and order it. Yeah, back in the day, man, it was like, yeah, that's what got me started. It amazed me seeing a model car actually functioning and moving like that. I was blown away.
Yeah, imagine if you got to see that video again now. Because you saw it back in the day, but now seeing it now, knowing what you've learned and what you've already accomplished. It'd probably be crazy.
It'd be unfair, though. I mean, but it'd be nostalgic,
yeah,
for sure. But things have changed so much. Like, the model game is now the model game. It used to be a hobby. Now it's the model game.
True.
It's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing that red Cadillac, the Blood Sacrifice.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that on that group, True Riders.
Yeah.
And was that like a battle that you were doing with somebody?
Yeah, man. Shout out to Mike Wiggins, man. He's a Chiefs fan too. He accepted the challenge. Really what happened, I needed the extra motivation because somebody, a member of a car club asked me to do a replica of their car. It was a red Cadillac like that. But the guy ended up flaking. I ain't gonna mention his name now, but he ended up flaking on the bill. So previous to him flaking, I just wanted to, you know, people didn't know I was doing that car already for a reason. So I threw it out there. Hey, anybody want to do a build off?
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Wiggins was the only one that accepted it. And he was a good competitor. He, you know, he talked a lot of crap. He put up with my crap. I did it because if you, I'm petty, man. You go get, my whole club is petty. Los Underground Kings, we're very petty. We like to talk crap. We pick stuff apart. We're not nice. And when it's build-off time, I get vicious. Mm-hmm. I'm making memes about you. I'm doing everything I can to throw you off your game.
Yeah.
Hey, man, it's all fun.
Yeah, because I remember, like, once it was done, like, photos were being posted, and people are going like, damn, like that was a crazy battle. Like, damn, like everybody, you could tell everybody was like tripping out and liked it too. They were like entertained, like, man, this was crazy. This was like worth it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We made it crazy. Then he agreed. Mike agreed to give me like an extension because I kind of like went above and beyond. I did the build off, but in the middle of the build off, I stopped. Because I cut the doors on the Cadillac. You know, everybody knows that body is really hard to do an open door version because there's basically, once you get to cutting it apart, there's nothing there. It falls apart. But I found other ways. I kind of stole one of Jerry's ideas. I seen on his, that he has a black 70, I don't know what year it is, but the one with the sliding moonroof, I seen how he did the A pillars on his car. I was like, okay. So once I figured that out, I was able to cut the doors on the Cadillac. I casted it, sent the chrome off the chrome. I did a bunch of stuff, and he gave me an extension on the time. So they kind of made it a controversy because he tried to pull out, oh, well, you didn't finish on time. I'm like, hey, man, you gave me an extension. So, you know, you got to exploit the loopholes.
No, yeah. Is there like a different Cadillac version that you've created? It's like a LUGK version or something? Because I feel like I've seen a resin or something online like a while back.
Yeah, I did. I still got the mold for it. I did, that was before I bought a pressure pot and started pressure casting. Mm-hmm. I did a two-door that Cadillac with the doors cut open, and it came with the doors and the interior already cut. It was a lot of people saying, oh, why are you sitting on something we can make? But I'm like, a lot of people don't know how to like approach making the car like this with the doors open, and they want the doors open. So I sold a few of them.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, because I see, because it is true, though. Like, you do make it easier, like, you're already by casting it. Because I know when I had to do my Cadillac for the Cadillac Fest, when I decided, oh, I want to cut the doors open, thinking that, you know, I was just going to be able to cut them and hinge them, and it's no problem. But it was like,
yeah.
Once you cut the doors out, it's like the front windows, pillars are like falling, like, they're loose. It's like,
yeah.
Wait, what the heck? And you start running, you open up like more, it extends the length of this build now, right there.
Oh, yeah, because you got to start fabricating.
Yep.
And to get that, to give you just understand, like, okay, where do I start? What do I need to do and put what where? That's hard to come up with that, to make it, you know, actually work and look scale and look right.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. I was like, what the hell? I never even done this. I was tripping out, like, right when I got to that moment. But I just had to, like ask, get help, you know, and then start putting it together. Then finally, I was like, all right, cool. I feel like I made it out of the woods. But, you know, it's like anything. As soon as you want to start cutting stuff up, it's like, you know, you're going down that path. You're going to have to just fabricate from there going forward.
Oh, yeah. When you're looking at a kit and it's new, and it's fresh, the body is all pretty and it's like perfect looking, and you think, okay, I'm gonna cut the doors. You're jumping down a rabbit hole, cause to get the doors cut open, jam it correctly, and it's not 9 cars out of 10 are not jammed. Scale. A lot of them are jammed pretty. They're jammed nice looking, but it's not scale. They don't put the dog leg in there. They don't put the actual contours of the inners, the inner structure of the jams look. It's not, most time it's not correct. So you already, you know, you put yourself in the position. But then if you don't know how to fabricate correctly, you won't be in for it. A lot of them kids end up in the trash or in a box forever, and somebody will start up with a new body and don't cut the doors open.
Yeah, true.
I tell people without a lot of, you know, fab skills, I'll be like, build the car stock. Learn how to do the modification stuff on something else, and then try it on an actual project that you care about.
Yeah. No, that's true. There was a Cadillac, I want to say maybe like a year ago, that I purchased from a friend, and he was like, he's like, I'm not going to work on this anymore, because he decided he wanted to like step away for a while. And right. And he still hasn't been active as to this date. And when I got the, he told me it's open box and everything. Originally I was going to do it for Caddy Fest, but I just got busy and I can't work on it. So he cut out one of the doors, but his door, he cut it smaller. So this way he didn't have to do any like of the mods with, you know, creating like the pillars connecting to the body and everything. I'll have to send you a photo, but I'm pretty sure you could just visualize it. Like as the pillars going down, it's just like, it lines up the way he cut that door and he made it smaller. Like he was already filling in the lines and everything. And I was like, oh damn. Like that's crazy. When I saw that, I was like, all right, I see what you were up to. I was like, crazy.
Wrong. I call those wrong door Cadillacs. That's what people do it like that. It's like, you cut it wrong, that's just it.
Yeah, because it wasn't on the line at all, like where the door is going to begin. It was like there was still a gap, like a space right there. And then he cut the thing down. And I was like, oh, damn. And I told him, I'm like, you didn't want to cut it, huh? Because you knew you had to do all this work. And he's like, yeah, I didn't want to get into all that.
Yeah, it's not easy, man. I call them wrong, don't cut. I've seen some other people try to pull that off, and I'm not forgiving, man. I'm not gonna make it, you know, seem like I'm all like, you know, like I don't praise bad work. I'd rather, you know, roast you if I have to, you know, I'm gonna pick it apart. Because if you're trying to build for a show, you think I'm judgmental. Wait till you see them old men coming in there that's used to building cars that are bone stock or like dead on scale, and you don't blackwash in between your door lines perfectly, or you didn't do this correctly, or you don't have this wire running to this. So it's like, you might as well let me tell you first while I'll be on the internet before you go in there and be crying in the car without getting a trophy. Because you're not going to get one, because you got to learn. It's hard. I'm not even there. I'm probably like 65% there as far as detail, as far as a show builder.
Yeah.
I'm in the internet a lot because I do big, like, modifications and I animate stuff. But as far as detail, some people blow me away. I'm like, wow, I don't even know how they do it. I don't even understand how they can glue something that small.
Right. Yeah. That's always a trip. Like, what are they using? I feel like if I glue, I'm going to put a lot of glue in it and then I'm going to like fog it up, or it's just going to look funky. It's not going to look right.
Yeah, man. All that photo edge stuff and all that. Like, it's amazing. Like, okay. I know, you know, Derek Carline. You remember his car, the Contract Killer?
Mm-hmm.
The red 64. I was tasked with taking that car to California. I went to California. I think it was 2016. I went to Santa Clara for the what's that place?
In and out, yeah.
I came out there and I took that Contract Killer car. The first time I touched it, I broke some off the photo edge off the body. I'm like, I don't even know how he even built this and got it together and got all this stuff glued to it. You look at the edge; he got these freaking the valve cover bolts sticking up with wing nuts on them, and it's like, I'm like, oh my god, how do y'all do this? Yeah. So it's like, that's what made me know that, yeah, you build some pretty stuff, but you got some more work to do. You got to step your game up and start doing the detail stuff.
Yeah.
That's how you really going to, you know, knock it out the park.
Dang. That's crazy. When what year was that when you came out to the NNL West?
I believe it was 16. Okay. I think you, didn't I meet you? Did I meet you there?
I don't think I was at that one. I went... Maybe, because I went to this year's 2019. 2018 was the first time I went out there.
Okay. I got to meet a lot of people out there, man. I hung out with Armando Flores, took us all to eat to a steakhouse. I got to meet Jebries. We hung out and talked, and it was fun. I met a lot of people.
Yeah, because
I
did see a photo. There's like a group photo with a lot of you guys hanging out there at the at the show. And I was like, damn, that's tight. Are you planning anytime soon to come out again?
Yeah, me, JC, well, JC21 Customs, I know y'all don't know him. Dig, who else is in that group? So far, it's us three. We planning on coming out to NNL. We've already looked at plane tickets and hotels and stuff. So we planning on getting out there next year.
Awesome. That's dope, man.
I don't know about Cadillac Fest. Is Cadillac Fest going on still?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I haven't gotten any word or any news about. I'm sure it will. I just don't. Right now, I don't know like any dates or anything for next year. But yeah, definitely that'd be sick if you guys come out. Are you gonna try to bring all your cars, all the new ones that you've been working on, or not working on that you've been busting out with at the shows? I saw that most recent one that you did.
Which one?
There was one that was there. I don't know if it was one of the Plastic Society shows or maybe it was a different show, because I think it was a competition show. And I remember somebody telling me, like, man, like Tony Hands, I just took it all. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I busted out some shows, I busted out, like, I did a replica of the mothership, And it actually, it drives. It's remote control, no wires. It got like remote control lights, like how you got the engine lit up and the trunk lit up. It got the actual color bar. It got a Jeffries color bar in it. And it's so crazy because the car is 1/25th scale, but it's full function and full detail. Like the door is open, the trunk open, has the actual trunk display. I'm doing the pump setup now, about to send it off and get it chrome plated. All full chrome undercarriage, everything. And the car still is like full show opened up.
That's crazy. Like when you're doing a car like that, when you're looking at it and you're gonna get started on it, you know, does it cross your mind like how am I gonna fit all this in? Or are you just kind of just going with the flow and just seeing like what else you can do to it step by step?
That goes like this. I'll get the car and I'll just pull out like the chassis and the interior tray. And I'll just start staring at it. And I'll start over time I found like tiny, small components, like, you know, RC components. So I'll start like figuring, I can put this under here. Okay, if I cut the floor, a lot of my cars that the floor is cut out and raised up. Like a lot of times if you look in there, you'll see like it might have a really thin bottom seat cushion section. It's really thin. But that's because I raised the whole floor up to fit batteries and receivers and all this kind of stuff under there. Like a lot of those cars are like maybe 9 electrical components inside the car.
Dang.
With everything open and visible. Mm-hmm. So I'll just start finding places. And my boy said I'm a master at creating space. I create space. But it still looks close. But if you start looking close, you're like, oh, that's not scale. That gas tank is not scale. It's not shaped like that. Because I know, because I cut it out and made a box out of styrene because I got a receiver and a power supply unit in there. Mm-hmm. So I can't leave it stock. I had to make space for it. So it's like I compromised the scale look with fitting stuff.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I had to, it's like a balance to make it look good. And, you know, cause like, I feel like when I send my cars out of the show, if it's going to be judged, they're going to look under there and be like, that's not how a spindle for this car looks. But then they got to understand, like, no, it can't be made like that because it has to function.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but a lot of times they look, a lot of times, but lately they're starting to understand it more and recognize the work done to go along with, you know, how it came out versus how this one right here that's perfectly scaled looks compared to how the undercarriage of mine looks.
Yeah, that truck that you did some years back that had the bed dancing, I believe you also took that to NNL West. It was like yellow, the paint job, and I think it had like some purple in it.
Pagan Gold.
Yeah, Pagan Gold. Was that one of your like first works with messing with like RC stuff and all that?
I did a 59, just RC. Then I did a 65. And then I built one of those, a 25th scale, the little Chevy or GMC. Is it a Cyclone? The truck?
Mm-hmm.
It's like an S10 little kit, whatever. But I took one of those and I blacked out the windows and I built a Z-Rack. And the suspension on that truck, kind of like a test mule. And I built it on that platform to see if I could make it work. So I built that as a preamble to building the Tropical Storm. That's what the 120 scale gold one is called, Tropical Storm.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. It was like my third, it was like my fourth time building the RC, but that was like the biggest one I jumped into.
Yeah. Damn, that's crazy. And even like, so like from then on, I mean, you've been like going down this path, like RC, you know, just challenging yourself. Cause that stuff's hard. Like I wouldn't even know where to start. if I was like put to the test. I a while back I attempted doing like hoppers. I've messed with like the servos, got that functioning, rising the back, and then I learned how to do like the A arms in the front, have everything with the string pulling. Just like a hop because of that group, the True Riders. That's where I was like learning off of that from people that were showing like, look, this is the belly. Let me show you my setup. And everybody was kind of just showing stuff. So I gave it my take, but it was funny because every time I would put like a hopper together, not painted, just on its own, I could get it hopping. Uh-huh. I take it apart, I paint it, and I try to assemble it, and I could never get it hopping again. It was weird. Like the string, something was always off. And then I kept ripping out the A arms, the Johnson motor, the battery I was using, something was off. Like it was either too strong and it was just everything I would attempt and it would like lock or rip the A arms off.
Right. Yeah, that can happen. Cause when I do a hopper, I build it for strength. Now I really build you know how you gotta have the little, what would you call them? The little eyelets, the connection points for where you got to slot the little
where you put like on the belly, right? Those little eyelids.
Yeah, the one that goes across member. You got to put the little eyelet in there, whatever. And now instead of just gluing a piece of styrene to it and then using the pen putting the A-arm on, I'm going to glue the styrene. I'm gonna put the plastic tube on there for it to slide through. Then I'm gonna take some plastic. Some styrene, and I'm gonna do a connection from. I'm gonna set a piece of styrene next to that tube, so it goes to the tube and to the cross member. Then I'm gonna come with another piece of thinner styrene and cover everything. So now this can't rip off the chassis; it's all part of it now. Mm-hmm. I encase and enclose stuff, and I build it for strength. I just figured out how to do that stuff, and then that's when I balled it back out to where you really can't tell unless you're comparing it to another car.
Yeah, damn, that's tight. That's crazy. Yeah. And from doing like the RC stuff, I mean, I feel like, you know, like you did like the mothership and then even the that 57, the Bel Air, that blue one.
Yeah.
That one also, you have it hooked up, right?
But that one's wired, but I have a plug that you can plug into it. It mm-hmm. used to be, when it was white, it was fully RC, but thankfully it got smashed by one of my close partners. It got smashed by his son one day while we weren't paying attention. So, it got to get rebuilt and came back. Mm-hmm. There's another version. That's this one. I went and chromed everything out and did all the lights. But, yeah, it's a lot simpler and easier with less maintenance. I could pretty much build a car that's not RC that I got plugged up. I can build it and pretty much glue the body together. Excuse me, and it's going to be good. Now, these other cars, like my 63 or the mothership or like the new, I got a new bed there, so I'll be, I have to take those apart because I might break something. It's RC, a component might not be right. I might have a short somewhere. I got to check wire, so I got to always take those apart. That's why they suffer a lot, too, on final detail stuff, like radiator hoses. Now I got to do the whole magnet trick for everything because everything that has to come apart, I can't glue together.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little harder to work with. But like I say, some cars, if I'm going to make it drive, yeah, it's going to be remote control. But I'm kind of getting towards making them just plugged up when I want to build an actual show car so I can make it more closer to, you know, scale. Mm-hmm. I want them to build more closer to scale. Now. I'm still doing like one RC project per year.
Yeah. Man, that's crazy. I feel like the more you do it, it's just gonna get easier and easier with the RC stuff. And then, and then also like if like you said, like you do a build that you're like, you know what, I'm not gonna do the RC. I'm just gonna strictly build it and customize it. Even that's gonna be like easier because it's gonna take a load off of that work of the RC stuff, trying to like fit everything in there. But that's tight because I feel like by you doing all this stuff, it's like you're pushing that hobby to another level. Well, not even the hobby, like you said, the game. It's like on another level that it inspires more people. Like more people, I bet you, are curious. They want to learn how to do all that stuff. with the electronics.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'm finally starting to see people getting it. I seen the guy the other day on Facebook. He got his car, 6'4", probably got it raising up and hopping. And making a car RC hop is hard. That's really hard. I got two Cadillac RC hoppers coming. Like the red one I built another red one. This was Candy. And I built the blue one. It's a Nipsey Hussle tribute. But I got those two coming out. I really haven't. I haven't shown them really yet because they're still getting finished up. But they're RC hopper Cadillacs. But it's hard to do that because you either got to figure out how to find some kind of remote control car. They got a strong enough board to withstand hopping because hopping puts a lot of stress on like speed controllers is what you need to actually make the motor spin if you're doing RC. You got to have a way to get power to it and all that. But if you, or you can do it like Lalo did it before. He put a servo in there and put the switch in the car and make the, his yellow 64. I don't know if y'all remember that one, but he put a switch in there with a servo and he had a control over the servo, which would move back and forth and click the switch like we would be doing in our hand.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, different ways to do it.
Yeah, I always, even like following him on there, I always felt like even he was always like introducing something new, like always like challenging himself and busting out with something new. And everyone's like, whoa, what the heck? And then later he'll show you like this is what I did or, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. He's the one. Was Jeffrey the first to do the cylinder with the pull cables on it?
I don't even know, to be honest, on that. Like, who's the first?
I think Real Deal. I know Arturo was doing something back then, but I know Jeffrey came with their Real Deal 64, and that was the first time I ever seen A-arms and actual cylinders in the model. I'd never seen it before. But Lalo, what he brought, I stole this from Lalo. He makes... The way his cars hit that super, super hard three wheel, I'm just busting everybody's secrets out. I don't care because I bust mine out too. So we got to give it up for the culture. Yeah. Like, but how Lalo's car hit that three wheel real hard and just dropped that bumper down and just sitting that wheel up there. The trailing arms, your rear trailing arms, they twist in the middle. They articulate. So I figured out, I was looking, I was like, and I seen it and I messaged him. I said, hey, man. So your trailing arms are twisting? And he's like, yeah, they articulate. And I was like, okay. So I stole that idea from him, but I learned how to build them out of metal, but it's very complicated. Like, you got to know how it's made. One trailing arm has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pieces in it.
Oh, damn.
For one arm.
Yeah.
One arm has 7 pieces in it. When I make them like that, when they spin in the middle. So it looks like my trailing arms got a little split in the middle of it. That's because they twist right there. So if you want to lock it up and drop three wheel, it just twists right over. There's no restriction in the geometry of the suspension. It just twists and falls over.
Yeah.
I stole that from Lalo.
That's crazy. Yeah, and it's like it must take some time, right, to get the right measurement for each little piece that you're putting on there.
Takes a lot of time. Ever since I learned how to cast, I be thinking, okay, I'm so sick of building A-arms. I'm going to make these A-arms and I'm going to cast them. So next time, I don't have to build A-arms. And I always find myself just building the dang on A-arms over again. Yeah, I be happy. You got to get every little part right every time. And it's a bunch of parts that when you build a car like that, they get repetitive building. Like, I got to make more of these freaking U-mounts for the trailing arm to go in. You got to make more A-arms and extend them. And then you got to make this part, get the rear end, set it up. It's just a lot of work that gets, you know, kind of.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I always admire when I would go on that, they're on the True Riders and seeing the guys showing their hoppers. Like they would, they would show the car still in box, you know, not even built or nothing. And then it was like hours later, they already got it hopping. Like they would show like, I got her to work or whatever. And I'd be like, dang, already, you know?
Yeah, man. It's some good ones on there too.
Mm-hmm.
That are really, really good at it. They're fast. But This is what I always be saying about true riders. They be building them cars, they're painting, but you look under the bottom and the suspension is still white.
Oh, yeah, and it never gets painted.
Yeah, I'm like, man, once I finish the car.
Dang.
Yeah, I hear with the suspension naked. Nah, man, y'all just, they just build, you know, it's fun, though. They just build them just like to see them hop.
No, yeah, definitely. And one thing, too, I always admire, too, is like the front end. On some of them, they have this like natural bounce when it hits. Like,
yeah.
Like it doesn't land stiff. Like it would just kind of like, and then it would get that momentum again. Boom, hop up. Just giving that, like looking very realistic. And I always wondered, are they putting like a weight or something in the front? And are the springs really soft or something just to kind of get that? That was kind of the inspiration right there, what I was trying to go for back then. But nah, I didn't even get close to have that, like that kind of that natural bounce.
There's a few guys on there that do that perfectly. And I'm amazed at it myself. I built a couple of cars that my first really good hopper I built was a red 62 Impala. And they look just like Red Man, that 64 from Japan with the red paint, with the blacked out bumpers and stuff. I took it out to Cali with me. That car right there, after I got like the fifth, you know, iteration of the suspension working, I finally got the bounce in it. And it was getting the springs. You got to get the your riding height set perfectly. You got to have your cylinders created. Everything got to have is the right tolerances, and then you can, so you get enough travel in between there for the springs to work, and then you got to pick out the right set of springs to, you know, get the actual bounce in there. Them dudes had that. A lot of dudes wouldn't tell you, but they had it figured out. A lot of them dudes got it figured out. But I just got lucky and figured out how to get enough play in the springs before the ailerons bottom out. Mm-hmm. That's where you get your good bounce at.
Dang, that's tight. And so it's like you do, I mean, dude, I feel like you do like the whole thing, because not only do you do the modification to the body, the RC, the paint jobs too. That's another thing. Like you're going crazy with all these patterns and everything with the tape lines. I was tripping out on that. It's like a 1960 Impala.
Oh yeah, the Gold 60.
And I was like, dang, like you had shown a picture and it's just lots of lines. And all I kept thinking was like, if I had to work on that, I was just thinking like, oh man, it's going to take me forever to backmask.
It did. That's one thing I hate. What I do is I reuse the parts the tape pieces.
Mm-hmm.
If they're so sticky and you don't want a lot of tape, you know, I kind of detect the tape anyway before I start masking over my patterns. But I'll make the shape of the bag mask piece. I'll cover it. Then I'll take it off. I keep it intact. And I'll keep it on there. And I'll keep it intact on my mat. So then when I got to bag mask it again, I just put that one back on there again.
And you're good.
Or, yeah. Or I cut a bunch of the strips of the, you know, for the long skinny line. And then I'll make a bunch of curve shapes, small curves. I just might take the blade and just do a bunch of small little curves, fade-looking shapes. And those right there, you can sit there and you'll learn that you can sit there and fill up pieces of back mask real fast. You'll have shapes already cut, and you can just drop a piece in there with a point on it already, so you don't have to put it on there and try to cut it over the paint. Now, you already had to cut, and you just kind of fit those pieces together and back mask it a lot faster like that. That's what I had to learn how to do.
Yeah, because I always feel like those little corners or the little round radius parts is like the headaches. Like you need to fill in those little pieces, tiny little pieces of tape. I'm going to try that. I'm going to have to try that, how you're saying right now, cutting it.
Yeah, just cutting it. Think about how small your pattern's going to be. So just kind of like cut out a few little curves and make a curve around it and make it look like a little, like a canine tube, something like that. So that way you can put a piece there. Then you might take another piece and bam, now you got to, you know, filled in like a candy and chrome. How you scroll, you can fill in a scroll edge really quick. Then you just take some other pieces of tape and just bam, 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 like two or three pieces of tape side by side. So now you done filled in the whole pattern. And then you took your little pre-cut pieces and filled in the little points already. So So now it's a lot faster.
Yeah. When you were painting that car, in the patterns, it looks like you, like the colors you applied, like you put those colors and then like your final coat of candy or the paint that you laid over, it went over like the whole body. So it kind of gave it like a different like tone. Did you do that to that car, to the 1960?
No, actually with the 60, that's traditional style where I painted it. And then I completely masked all the patterns off. And then I just shot it with the gold and I covered the patterns. I didn't put any gold over the patterns.
Dang, yeah.
I let them be. But I cleared it and wet sanded it. I color sanded the clear mm-hmm. to where, and then I also sprayed. That's when I learned how to do patterns the right way on that car. I figured out how to spray so light and barely get any paint buildup. And it made my paint job look a whole lot better. Made it look a lot more crispy. And then I was able to clear it. And it wasn't no paint step lines and the patterns or nothing. It's just all smooth.
Yeah, that's cool. I remember the first time attempting to do a pattern paint job, I didn't really have a clue. I was just kind of like, I laid out one base color and then I did a pattern and then I just like masked the whole car, laid a color, but I was just putting so much paint. Then I would cover it up, more paint. At the end, I had all these different colors, but when I took all everything off and then I shot clear, it's like if you run your finger through the roof, you feel all the different steps.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a big rookie thing right there.
Yeah, and even somebody, one of my friends was like, I think you should sand this and add more clear. You need to bury it.
Yep, that's what you got to do. You got to bury it. Like right now, I'm in the process. I'm building a 61 Impala for the Dedicated Scale Magazine build-off,
mm-hmm.
the Lowrider of the Year build-off. And right now, I'm sitting here looking at the 61s in my face. I'm like wore out with it because I had to do the body work, get it in primer, get it, you know, sanded. I did a bunch of body mods on it. Then once I got it sanded, I sealed it. Then I had to hit it with silver. Then I had to let that dry. I came back and I pulled out my minigun and I blasted it with flake. I'm talking about a lot. I used the House of Color Micro Mini Flake or whatever it's called, Ultra, whatever it is, the mm-hmm. Ultra Flake Silver. I'm talking about blasting it with like three or four coats. You ever use a mini paint gun instead of an airbrush?
Yeah, like a touch up, like one of those small touch up guns?
Yeah, touch up gun. Yeah, you mm-hmm. used those before, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how fast you cover a car with that stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, you can blast it.
One coat, one pass is wet.
Uh-huh.
I'm like up close on it. I'm pushing it to the brink of a sag with flakes. I'm pushing that clear, 2K clear. I'm just pushing it to where it's about. I know exactly when it's about to let go and sag, and I pull back, hit it with a heat gun, kind of flow it out some, mm-hmm. come back and hit it again with a big heavy coat. I dump flakes into this car, and then I sanded it. Again, cleared it again. So now it's clear. Flakes covered deep and clear. Now I got to come back and sand it again. So it's like the paint job be a lot of work. You don't understand. It's a lot of work doing them when you're doing flakes. That's a lot of work because you got to sand it so many times and paint it again.
Yeah.
And then sand it again if you're going to do patterns.
No, it's true. It's crazy. I used to always think that, like, even in a real car, like, if they were going to do, like, once they laid their base or they flaked the car, I always thought, oh, they just tape over everything and they layer all their colors and they finally, at the very end, they clear the whole car and it's done. And then I started to learn later, like, it's in layers. Like, some people will lay a base or something and then they protect that. Or they'll lay some patterns yep. or something, and then they protect that. So they're just protecting, just having some insurance just in case something goes wrong. And yep. and then later, another friend of mine was telling me, like, oh, man, when I shoot flake on this car, I have to shoot so many quotes of clear because I need to bury that thing. Because
yep.
if not, you can still feel it. It's all grainy or, like, rough. And then the... It almost feels like the clear kind of shrinks too.
Yep, it does. It shrinks down into the, and it start, yeah, it looks horrible. And then you get trim. Oh my God, if you don't sand the clear right, I mean the flakes right, your trim is nasty. It looks like it's been dimpled and grazed. It looks horrible. So you got to smooth that out too. For the first time this time, I masked some of the pieces of the car. Like I masked the A-pillar, the A-frame, and like the grill up on the windshield grill. I masked that stuff, and it came out pretty good. Even after laying that really, really heavy clear flake, I was able to pull the masking off, and it had a clean line, and it was, you know. So now, like, my A-pillar didn't need no sanding or nothing because I didn't get no flakes on it.
Nah, that's cool.
Now, I had masked the trim pieces on the body, but a buddy of mine told me, you know, I might not want to do that because when I get to trying to pull tape off the body with that really heavy clear, it might not be a good day. And I didn't want to deal with it. So I just said,
have it all stuck really right there. Yeah, probably pull it. Damn, that'd be
crazy. Yeah, but I actually got away with pulling some tape off and doing flake for the first time. So I was like, okay. Get away with certain pieces.
Yeah. What PSI were you shooting when you were blasting it?
Like 22.
Oh, that's good.
Between 20 and 22. Yeah. I ain't get too heavy with it. Yeah, I wanted to just come out the gun and just fall on the body. Then I came back and kind of dusted too on top of there because I know the flake gonna hit it regardless. And then I always hit. After about my third coat of clear, I bust out the heat gun.
Speed it up.
Well, no, I flow the paint. I change the surface of the paint. Like that's how my paint jobs look like that. They don't. They're getting pre-cured and baked out between coats. And the heat actually, if you use a 2K clear, the heat will actually melt the paint out and make it even smoother after you spray it. So I use a heat gun. Yeah, my buddy Clown House, he was doing that. You know, he's a real painter. He's bad at it, but he did that to another buddy of ours' car. And he melted it.
Dang.
It was like a Suzuki Samurai, one of them little SUVs. It was a nice one. He melted it.
Oh, that's crazy. He's blowing it. Have you ever thought about using like a dehydrator or anything like that for your cars?
Well, I heard about those. When I move and get more room, I'll probably buy one. I don't have room really to add another piece right now. But I know a few people told me about those. Don't they dry your paint a lot faster?
Yeah, I've never used one, but yeah, some of my friends they'll use like Tamiya paint. Once they lay a base coat or anything, they put in the dehydrator to speed it up the process and just flow out. Right. I heard good things about them. I haven't used one yet.
Maybe I'm gonna add one. I just haven't. See, cause I'm just used to how I'm painting right now. The spot I'm in now, it's not like. I don't have a garage, so I'm kind of just working out, you know, partially out of my house. But I'm going to get more equipment and stuff later. Like, I'm going to add in the lathe and all that kind of stuff. But, like, for now, painting is such a process. Like, when I painted this, when I did this clear process on this 61, imagine, this car got, I had to paint 18 separate pieces. 18 pieces.
That's a lot.
Yeah, at one time. It takes over an hour to spray them.
Yeah, when
get them.
When you're painting these, do you have any issues with like weather or anything you have to deal with during that time?
Nah, man, I don't know. I feel like I'm a paint whisperer. I tell the paint to do what I want it to do, and if it's doing something else, I like kind of force it back into what I want it to do. Like if I'm getting problems with the paint, I'll sit there and I even put heat on it. And make the problem go away, you know, or I'll add more clear. I know I can sand it, which is not the best way to do it, but I've gotten so used to painting. I kind of know how to, you know, I've painted while it's raining. I've painted while it's really cold. I know how to trick the paint. I'll stand inside the doorway where it's really warm in it, and I'll hold the car right there and spray past it to where the paint is still going on the car in a, you know, in an okay environment.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get outside, it might be freezing cold. But the paint's in here, so it doesn't know. Sometimes I'll heat the body up. I'll heat, preheat the body with a heat gun. That way the paint hits it, it flows out better. It's just a bunch of little tricks I've learned.
That's cool. Yeah, I've never, I have one of those like little heat guns, but I've never tried it on like, I would want to try, I'm kind of curious not to try that like on clear, the clear coat, just to,
yes.
After you shoot your clear coat, just to like get a head start on it and have this like the flaw, because not long ago I had cleared a car and it was one of those things where I normally like to just still hang around as the car is just chilling there, even if it's like an hour or two. Cleaning up or doing whatever, and I kind of like I only had one more hour to kind of chill, then I jammed, and it wasn't until the next day in the morning I looked at the car and it was like some corner areas where they it was like dripping, but it was already dried, and I was kind of like, damn, I could have prevented that, like even when it was still wet, like I could have absorbed some of that clear, you know, but It happened like later in the night once I wasn't, you know, around it anymore, putting any attention to the car. And so I was kind of like, dang, I got to fix this right here.
You left the car and you let the paint kind of like do what it wanted to do. See, I've had that, like when I'm doing, when I'm shooting the heavy clear coat, especially with flakes, by that third clear, I'm already pushing the paint to the point to where it's ready to just drop and do a big old sag. So here I go. I'll come with that gun. And if you hold the paint, if you hold the body right at the right angle,
mm-hmm.
and you got the light on it the right way, and you take that paint gun, you could actually, if I had a camera on it, you could see me pushing the paint. I'm pushing the flow across the paint. You could see it. You'll see the paint go from, you know, naturally how it was laid, you'll just see it kind of melt and smooth out. Kind of like it's kind of the same as watching a welding puddle.
Mm-hmm.
When you can actually see somebody welding, you can see the puddle moving and it's still wet and it's turning into a steel, it's turning solid behind it.
Yeah.
And it's actually flowing out. I can push the flow of the paint across the car. I've gotten to where I can do that now. So if I don't want to polish your car, if I can get that clear perfect, I don't get no dirt, I'll take a gun and go back and flatten it out with a gun, with a heat gun.
I can
do it on hot setting. Yeah, where you can, like, if you sit it on the car for 4 seconds, it's going to melt the body. I can turn it up on high and get right up on it, like an inch away from it. I know how to play with this paint so good, I can go through there and check the paint and get it all flat.
Yeah.
To where it's like glass.
Yeah, because that's like the... Damn, that's the goal right there, you know, getting it to glass. The heat gun that I got it from that one that they sell at Harbor Freight.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I know it has like the hot setting, but is there other ones that have like different heat settings that you've tried?
Well, I got a little cheap. The heat gun I have is probably 20 years old or more. I got this heat gun from a guy named Mike, who owned a place called Mike's Hobby Shop. Is where I first used to. That's where I learned all my RC skills at. But they closed down, and he gave me their actual heat gun. And so I've been using that same one. It's just a little cheap metal heat gun with a high and a low switch, setting switch on it.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. He passed it down. You're still using it. That's tight.
Oh, yeah. I'm proud of it, too. I got it hanging right here on my little desk, and I use it. I got a lot of tools, a lot of specialized stuff. Like, I see you have a lot of specialized stuff. I like that.
Yeah.
You buy tools for the job.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That right there makes me respect the person that has proper tools. You're smart. That tells me things about you.
Oh, no, right on, man. I love them, man. Like, every time, there's, like, I'm always looking for something, you know, whatever's out there. And then I'm like, you know what? I want to get that. I want to try that. And then once I start messing with it and it makes it look like cleaner or it gets the job done faster or just, they're not even just fast. It's just like, there's more of an enjoyment, like appreciation of
right.
This is what this tool was meant for and it's doing it. You know, that's something that I admire a lot and I love it. I'm like, man, this is so cool. And I'm excited about it. Then I'm like, you know what? I want to tell people about this tool right here, you know? And even sometimes just showing a picture of it, it can spark questions. Like, what is that? You know, where'd you get that? Or what does that do? And then it goes from there. Like, so it's always cool. I always like that. And I'm always like also curious about what are you using? You know, what are you using? I like to see, because right. sometimes you know, you might have some tools that I don't even have and don't even know about. And then later I'm like, oh, what? I need to get that.
Exactly, man. That's what it's about. I like to it makes people better at stuff when they get the actual tools. Mm-hmm. Like, I've made a bunch of my own tools. Like, I didn't know that they made, you know, hinging pliers or actually bend hinges easier or whatever. But I took a set of needle nose and I figured out how long the bends need to be, the sections. And I took a hacksaw and I cut a line into the needle nose on the side to where I can make perfect hinges every time, exactly by the bend, because they're all going to be the same length, because I'm going to put them right here and bend them to this certain section where I put a line on them already. Yeah. So little stuff like that I do. Like, I made pattern. What I have done is I've put together a badass PC setup. I'm about to start doing, and I got Fusion 360. I'm about to buy me a resin printer. Mm-hmm. Everything that I want, I'm going to start making. Because that's what I like. I have, you know, to do patterns, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if everybody knows, to make those little bitty, tiny, skinny lines, they don't sell that tape. They might now, but they don't really. If they did, it'd probably be like $20 for 10 feet, and that ain't nothing. I throw away 10 feet trying to tape a car. But I'm going to make a knife setup just to make that tape. Yeah. I already got the idea in my head. Mm-hmm. I can 3D print it and it's a product. I just got to get time to get over there and, you know, get everything set up and go. But like, I make a knife that has two blades in it really close together so I can cut that little tiny tape. We need a tool for that. I want to make a tool.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I can see you making a lot of stuff because, I mean, you're, you know, based on your work and all this stuff you're doing on your own, it's like, you know, you already know what you want, what you need, and then you go, wait a minute, we don't have this right now. So then that's when all these like things are gonna pop in your head, like, I need to make this now. Especially with having the 3D printer, it's gonna just get crazy. And then now people are gonna be like, hey, you know, can you sell me one of those? Can you make me one of those pieces? I want one too.
Yeah.
You know, and do you think, you know how like you cast your A-arms, do you think later you might just 3D print the A-arms at some point?
Man, I'm going to 3D print everything.
Yeah.
Seats, all the seats I hand make. I make, every time I do a new car, I design some seats, I cast them, and I sell people the seats. So I'm, instead of having to do it by hand, I can sit there and draw. I know how to draw the pattern. I can get an even more intricate pattern than what I can build by hand, because I can cut tighter, you know, with a computer and a 3D printer. I'm going to make stuff on my printer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I can cast it then. Or if I'm a salesman, I'm not like a distributor. I don't like to sell stuff because I don't like making nothing over again. I like to make something once, but not again. I like to make something, either put it in a file and print it and sell people the file, or make something, give it to a caster who wants to cast it and give them a cut, and we, you know, sell it together type stuff. But I hate selling stuff. I'm horrible at shipping. I don't like going to the post office. I might take forever to send you your product, and I don't mean to. That's just how I'm wired.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather do something else. Yeah, who wants to stand in a post office? They're slow on being there. So, yeah. I don't like selling stuff, but I will. Like, mm-hmm. 58s. I've got like 10 of them sitting over here, but I need to finish the trunks and I need to finish some more pieces before they're completely done, which is also holding me because my pressure part is broken. So I don't want to sell them until they're all, until each one of them is sitting in a box, ready to go, with my return address on it. And all I got to do is fill in the address and put a thing on it and take it to the post office. Then I'll sell it, because I don't want to be like having people mad, like, oh man, I bought this from him and he's taking forever. It's like, no, I'm going to make it, but it's going to be when I feel like doing it now, because I got to do it again. I don't like doing stuff again. So that's why the 3D print is going to make me, I'm going to bring a whole lot of stuff to the market when I start actually getting to this. Once I'm done with these little builds I'm doing, I'm going to be on a 3D situation, design a lot of parts and bringing them out, parts that are made. Like, I'm going to make the rear end, the rear axle setups with the power balls separate, so you can make actually power balls. And I know how to make power balls, but then I'm going to make the actual, where you can get them in the rear end, cap them different. I can make different drawings for different chassis and all that stuff. We'll make whole setups to where it's going to look much more scale than having, and then you don't have to build it by hand, so it's not so, you know, irritating. I thought about even coming out with chassis already done. I mean, I'm talking too much about, you know, my ideas, because people are easy, you know, run with that. But you want to do a hopper, but like me, like you, we don't want to sit there and glue them eyelets on there and put them dang on freaking mounts for the trailing arms and make this and make that. Screw that. I'm about to change the game. There's something coming that I got some drawings already been working on, but they're going to come out.
No, heck yeah. It's true though, because it's like, I know when I wanted to do the hopper, I was kind of like hoping, like, man, if somebody just sold like all the parts like on the bottom, like a little kit, I would buy that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. All my beer. But yeah, I'm doing a lot of stuff. Like the 112-57. I have a 112 scale 57. I got some Jerry's wheels when he first made his first run. And then I got some new Jerry's wheels, the new True 13s. You see the size difference. He came a long way. I love these wheels. I bought them like jewelry. I'm going to buy another set just to have. I'm not even putting them on nothing. I'm just going to have them, put them in a case, because there he made them. But I got a 112 scale 57 Bel Air. I'm doing a working convertible top for it.
That's
but it's going to actually work.
Yeah, that's tight. That's a pretty big size model, huh? I'm like trying to visualize it, like, because I've seen the boxes sometimes, like at the shows that they're selling it, but I've never been like, oh, let me check it out, you know, to take it out. And I'm just like, right now I'm just looking at my desk going like, man, this thing must be like this big.
Yeah, it's pretty big, man. It's like one of these cars is about the length of your computer keyboard. That's about how big they are. It's not the length of the computer keyboard. And so, yeah, I'm making that with the actual folding, working remote control ragtop. So I'm doing that right now, you know, getting all the pieces modeled out. But it's going to be part, it's going to be a, you know, a multimedia. It's going to be part resin 3D printed and part photo etch. You know, because you got to have the little linkages that connect everything. So it's parts, yeah, it's a lot of stuff I'm working on so I can, you know, it's really for my build, but if I can build a kit successfully, I'll sell more to other people.
Yeah, that's cool.
Once I prove it works.
Yeah. Dang, that's bad. Dude, I was going to ask you, I don't know if it was a year or 2 years ago, there was like a video I had seen online where there's, I don't know the name of the guy's show. It was like a car show, and he ends up like interviewing you. I believe David's in the video and somebody else. And you guys are talking about like model cars, and it was like a segment where they had you guys on. You guys are sitting down, and I think you have your truck right there too.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was at Showdown in Farmers Ranch. It was like a TV show or YouTube show thing we did or something. They had us on. Yeah.
That's tight. Like, was that like 2 or 3 years ago when that happened?
It was like 2 or 3 years. It's like 3 years ago. That was me, Dig, which is Dave, and Cynical. That was us three. Cynical got the mustache, the stash.
That's cool.
We was all on that. So it was a funny dude. I was just in Austin with that dude. He is hilarious. That dude, he's something else. if he said more stuff, y'all got to actually hear him say stuff. Yeah, I'll be like, oh my God. That dude's funny.
That's cool. Were you guys like at a model show or how did that happen? Like they just like were like, hey, what's up? Let's do an interview. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a model show, and then like it was like some dudes got like a TV show or YouTube, some show they got. I think it did come on TV or something. And I guess they picked out some cars that we did, and they wanted us to talk about the models or whatever like that. So we just did a little segment for them.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool. I watched it on YouTube. I can't remember what it was called. I'm at the
I was trying to find that like earlier this week. I was like, what was the name of that show and the link? I was trying to find. I couldn't even because I couldn't remember the name of the show. But I remember watching that a while back and being like, oh, that's tight that they were on there.
I know Dig will remember. I'm gonna ask Dig what was the name of it. I'm gonna save the link. I'll shoot it back to you once I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanna check that out right there. Another question I had for you is your name on Instagram, Fab Kings. How'd you come up with that name, or what does it mean?
Because my favorite part of doing model cars is fabricating. And I'm an underground king with Los Underground Kings. So I'm like the fabrication king. Like, that's what it means, Fab Kings. It's fabrication kings. And like, I call other people a Fab King when they do crazy stuff. Like, he's this dude named Luna. He is a man. He builds donks. And he like fabricates and builds them crazy. I was like, dude, you're a Fab King. So it's like, people that do stuff that's crazy, they're a Fab King. But it's like, that's just what. You know, I just like it was a cool name. It just came together kind of cool, Fab King. So that's what it stands for.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Dope. That makes sense. Yeah. Cause I don't know. That was something I've always was wondering. Like, cause I always wonder with, you know, when everybody creates their name, their alias, or it's like, well, what's the origin or the backstory behind the name? That's cool.
I like it. And see, I did that. I didn't want it to be like, I wanted my model brand to be like a brand separate from me. First off, I don't tell everybody I build model cars. So I don't connect it to my name because, I don't know, it's just like an inside thing. I just think people think it's corny. Oh, you play with toys, huh? You play with the toy cars, you're going to build your toy cars, shut up. You know, so it's like, I have that identity, and I have my music identity, and I have me. So, but I wanted Fab King to be to where later on, like we spoke about earlier, when I release kits and, you know, custom parts and stuff, it's not, you know, it's not just like my name on it. It's a brand, like a brand name, Fab Kings.
Yeah.
Presents, you know, so that's another reason why it's like that.
That's dope. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that's definitely, because, I mean, you know, that name, you've built it up already by the work, the work you're doing. And it's like, once you have a product and you're going to put it out, it's like the name's there. It's like, you know, this is solid. Definitely, you know, the backing's there, as opposed to like, you know, like if you started like a whole new name, now it's like you have to put more work, start over sort of with that new name to build it up. But I like that.
Exactly.
Right there that you have. That's cool.
Appreciate it, man. That's how, you know, like how you got Scale Riders, how it's like, that's something that's like, boom, you can come out with anything with that name, whether it be a podcast, it could be, you know, products, it could be t-shirts, you can do hats, you can do whatever you want to do because you got the name like that, no. And if it was just your name, it would be kind of different. You would want to put everything tied to your name like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know. What if something fails? You won't be known as like, yeah, you that guy. Didn't you fail back in the day? Fail Kings.
Yeah. No, it's true. You're so right. Dang. That's crazy. And how long have you been a part of LUGK?
It was like, it was a long time ago. think it was like 7 years now. I think that's what JC said. He told me the other day. It was at like the last, what show is that? Autorama. It was at the last Autorama that was in Dallas that we was able to do models at. And I think that was in like 2014, I believe. Yeah, I think it was around 2013, 2014, something like that.
Yeah, is that kind of like around when you got in? Is that around the time you met all the guys, or it's like you would kind of see them from time to time? How it all came together?
Well, actually, my boy I mentioned, JC, from JC 21 Customs Paint. I was building that truck. I had already built the truck. I had built that truck, and then the new bed dancer I got now, and I'm about to put out. I had built the bodies. I extended the cabs on both of them, and I found him on what is that website everybody used to be on?
Was it the Lay Low, or Lay Low?
Yes, Lay Low.
Lay Low. Sorry.
Yeah, I was on there and I found JC on there. Somebody was like, he paints, and I found him. I was like, oh shit! I didn't know how to do patterns back then. That stuff was like black magic to me back then. So I called him, I hit him up. I found out he was close to me in here in Texas, so we linked up. I gave him my trucks, and I think I paid that dude like a lot of money. I probably paid him like $600 to pay both of them trucks or more, because I gave him even more money because it was just looking so good. I was like, dude, and I didn't know that it was, you know, the skills. So it was like, that looked expensive. So I had him paint the trucks, but as he was doing it, he seen me putting it together. And so when they seen all the crazy work I was doing, that's when they, at a show, they just all walked up on me. It looked like they was gonna jump me and stuff. They was like, hey, what's up, dude? You want to be with the AUG?
Oh, damn.
Donnie was all like, yeah, man, you know, we like your work and stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know, I was like, oh, okay, here, yeah. So, you know, they was all real cool. And I joined up with them.
That's tight. Yeah, I like the name. I think I like even the plaque, the way it looks while you put those in. You guys put them on your cars. It looks cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, me too, man. I like them, man. We got plaques now. Three of us now. We got some plaques, like actual plaques, metal plaques.
Mm-hmm.
They going out to. I think we're sending them to Crazy Cutting if he's here. The guy, I think he's like president of Rose. Only he has crazy because we're sending our plaques over there to get engraved and gold and chrome plated. So we're finna bring some, finna bust out some badass model car cup plaques. But like, I think they're probably 3/4 size of a big plaque. They're not quite as big as a plaque for a car, but they're the right size to bring to a model show and not look ridiculous, but look kind of scaled down a little bit. But we get them done up real good, yeah.
That's cool. Cause at these shows, I mean, that's what makes it exciting, the presentation. And when you bring something like that to the table with the car too, it just adds more to it.
Oh yeah. Especially when they're done, like, especially when you get them the chrome in it and gold and engraving. You know, I love engraving, man. Engraving is just, that stuff right there is like magical to me too. Watching somebody engrave.
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn how to do that one day too.
Yeah. That's a whole nother art right there alone.
Oh yeah.
That's crazy. And
When
you guys have like your the Plastic Society events,
correct.
How excited are you or how pumped are you when those events are, you know, coming up, because it's like you're getting all your homies plus friends. They're going to be linking up together on that date.
Man, it's fun. Because, like, if I was to come around this, I know people probably, I'm known for talking a bunch of crap or roasting people a lot on Facebook. So if you come and actually see us in person, how we actually act and how outlandish and ridiculous we get and how we roast each other, it is so funny. Y'all, that's the funnest thing ever, to be at a show with us.
Because
we are ridiculous. Like them old dudes being there, they be looking at us like, who got them guys come on here? Man, there's hip hop cars out here. I'll get that crap out. You know, the old because they don't be knowing about the Lolos and stuff. You got that taint on there, flipping and flopping, you know. That so we'd be in there clowning, man. Straight clowning. It'd be so fun. I know y'all have built customs with my boy. He'd be talking so loud. I'd be like telling him, hey, man, stop talking so loud. You're embarrassing us, man. So it's like, it'd get crazy when we got together. So it'd be real exciting. We'd be on each other the whole time, making fun of each other's cars. Then we go eat. We go somewhere to one of these bars and eat or something. You know, we have a good time every time. Like, it was just in Austin. It was a bunch of us down. We went down and took over Austin a few weeks ago, and it was real fun.
That's cool. Do you live pretty far from David, or are you guys kind of close on the distance?
David is in, well, he's in Denton, so he's like probably like 40 minutes drive from where I'm at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we close enough to where we still, you know, we'll link up from time to time.
Yeah. That's tight. And everybody else, they're like a little bit kind of more spread out, or they're kind of near?
Well, let's see, JC, he's in college, so he's like an hour and some drive, maybe like an hour and 10 minutes. My boy Steve, he close. He's a few minutes down the road. Like, I don't know where all the other members live at, but these are the ones I interact with the most. Like, excuse me, Thorne. Thorne is out. He's out here. He's close to me. Then we got crazy ass Art. He's down in San Antonio. That's like a long drive. That's like more than 4 hour drive. I think 6 hours. I think to get to where he's at. So, yeah. We all kind of close. Then we, you know, a few hours apart at the most.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Do you guys ever get together to like work on stuff kind of together?
No,
it's just kind of everybody, really. Like, you know, you guys get in your own zones and then just kind of show each other kind of what's going on.
Some people probably, but it's just like, to me, honestly, building models to me is not a social thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of I'm in here, dusty. I got this space right here. Now, when I move and get a bigger place like mm-hmm. I had, it'd be cool. I'll be having it set up for people to come.
Yeah,
but it's like this is my little space. I don't want nobody here. I don't want you touching nothing on my spot. You might move this piece that I set right here. You're going to make something roll off the desk. You might be talking too much while I'm trying to cut something or in my way. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really like people to be around.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Like I was telling my my friend Dennis that lives in Florida. I was telling him, man, like I really want to paint this car. Like I want to paint soon. I haven't painted in a while. And he's like, why don't you just paint in the balcony? Because right here in the apartment that I live at. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to piss off the neighbors, you know, because of the smell of paint. But then I was like, you know what? Fuck it, I'll do it. But then I brought my compressor and everything, and I was just kind of like, I started bringing stuff out, trying to do the attempt, but then I was like, I felt really weird, like just out of my zone. I didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And
then
he's like, why don't you go to one of your friend's house and paint there? He's like, why don't you go to like Armando's or one of your friends that lives like close to you? And I was like, I mean, that offer's been there. Like people have told me, come through, you could paint here. But it's not the same. I was like, I need to go back.
Man.
I need to go back. So I'm like 40 minutes away to where my parents live. And that's where I pretty much have left like all my setup.
Right.
Compressor. Everything's there. So, and my paint. So then when I was over there, I was just like, oh, this is cool. I'm by myself. No one's going to bother me or nothing. You know, I can be loud. And everything, and even the smell doesn't, it just goes up. Like, it doesn't even go to the, drift off to the sides or anything. And
right. And
I was just concentrated in what I'm doing, and I'm not worried about nothing. And I remember one time I invited one of my friends. He doesn't build model cars at all. He's just like,
that's the first mistake.
Oh, yeah. He just chills. And I told him, hey, I'm gonna be in town, like, right there, my parents. Working on a car, or I'm gonna paint it. If you want to come through, come through. And he's like, yeah, cool. Shows up, we're like talking, and then I'm trying to set up, but it's like distracting. I can't really set up right. He's kind of in the way, and I'm kind of like, oh, excuse me, dude, hold, because it's small in there, you know. I'm like, let me turn this on real quick. Oh, hold on, let me stand over there, dude, because I don't want to get this overspray on you, or I don't want to get lacquer thinner on you, you know. And
yeah,
and then he, like, little by little, he just started like standing more back and more back and more back, and now it's almost like he's yelling at me, you know, like. I'm like, hold on, dude. I can't talk. Let me put on the mask. So now he's just standing there, like staring at me, watching me work. And now I feel pressured. Like, all right, I gotta knock this out quick, because now I gotta hang out with them still, you know? So
yeah,
I was kind of like, dang, like it didn't feel comfortable or nothing. And then I was just like, you know what? I'll do this another day. I don't want to mess this up. So I just put it away. We hung out. And then after that, he's like, hey, when are you going to come over again? I was like, ah, not anytime soon. but then I'll be over there like painting away or whatever, doing something.
Yeah, man.
And I'm like, like that when it comes to paint, I do have to be by myself. I don't know what it is, but I have to. And even like here in my room, the way I have like the table set up with my tools and like my bench. And for the most part, it's like there's only enough room for just me, you know, like,
right. Like
if I invited a friend over, I mean, we could come kick it, but I don't know if I would want to work on models here. I'd probably be like,
nah,
let's just go drink or kick it something, like, let's go do something, you know?
Yeah, because it's so personal, like that time and what you're doing, it's like building models is like a stress relief. It's like, it's a way to focus and calm yourself and do a bunch of things. And you just don't need the energy there sometimes. It's just like somebody might be there and they don't have no horn, but they're just looking like, dude, what are you doing? And it'll just throw your energy out so bad to you. You just throw the card in. I'm like, I don't want to do this now because this person just ruined my energy.
Yeah.
I won't answer the phone because if I'm not doing that, tomorrow I'm building from 8 to noon. I won't answer the phone. I don't care who's calling me. Because my mom, I'll text you already. She was like, yeah, I'll be like, I'll call you in afternoon. Because if I get off of my path that I'm working on that day, it's going to mess everything up. So I don't turn on the TV. I'll turn on YouTube, you know, some kind of car or some kind of engineering show or something like that. But I'll just sit there and work. And I don't even like to say a word to a nobody at all until noon.
Yeah. No, yeah, you got to be in that.
That's my building time.
Yeah, and you got to be in that mode right there. Because that's true. It does mess with your time. So do you mostly work like in the mornings, like throughout the, till the noontime?
Yeah, that's normally like my normal functioning time. Like I usually don't like working on, I'm weird. Like I have a schedule throughout my day. So like I even eat certain times, so it's like once I've already passed a certain window, it's the next day. Like certain stuff I could still do. Like tonight I've actually been working on some 58s. I got like three of them I gotta build, so I've actually been here getting stuff done. But it's like I really would rather do it in the morning, but it's like I also gotta paint this 61, so it's like I gotta work more times than I would normally work. But normally, it's only in the morning time from like 8 till noon. That's my model car window. That's when I'm the most calm. That's when I'm not going to have anything on my mind. I'm not going to have any distractions. The sun is out, so I can step out on my patio and do what I need to do. I got like a whole, my storage closet is a complete workshop. They got everything, compressors and all kinds of stuff out there. But I can work right there, get done, and then go to the gym and go about my day. And then I'll wake up the next day and I'll start where I left off. I might just get up and do one thing. I might get up and only hand some doors. But if noon hits, I get up. I stop. I'm like, I'm done. I'll come back tomorrow.
Yeah, that's dope, man. I wish I can do that, like to work in the morning till the noontime.
Yeah.
I feel like I would get a lot more done, and that's probably what I'd be more the most like. How are you? Like, calm and like concentrated and like just like into it. Cause right now for me, the only time I got is at night, and it's like, even then, by the time I get home, I eat and I'm chilling and I'm giving myself some time to kind of disconnect from everything that just went on during my day and the drive. Right. And now I'm like, all right, I need to start getting, you know, myself hyped and pumped to work on these cars. And sometimes it doesn't happen. It's just, I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that right now. Like, I don't want to get dust all over me or all over the place.
Yep.
And I'm like, do I really want to bust everything out? Cause I only got an hour or two and it's like, that's not even enough time.
It's not, man. That's why I try to do it in blocksmith. And if I can't get it, what I want to get done, I just hold it to the next time. But like, I try to do everything in waves. Like I was in the fabrication wave. Well, first time I did the suspension wave, getting all the suspension set up. Then my whole fleet I'm working on, I'll get all the projects to body work. Then I come through and get them all in, you know, interior stage. That's when the body work is. When I get in primer, then I move to interior. Get off the body work stuff for a while. Then I come back, I get everything in. Now I'm in paint mode. When I paint one car, I try to have all the cars, or like, you know, at least 3-4 cars, all in paint mode to where I can paint everything within that week. Because after that, I don't want to paint no more. I'm going to be tired of painting. So I try to, you know, work in sections, but with multiple cars. That way I can get everything kind of be nearly in the same stage. That way the fleet kind of gets done at the same time. Before a show circuit, I had like 13 new cars. But it took me like 2 years. This last fleet I've been working on for like 3 years almost. I haven't been going to shows with done cars for like 3 years.
Yeah, dang. Any updates on that 51 Bel Air, that chop top you did a while back?
That one is coming. I plan on having that done for the 2020 season.
Nice.
I'm doing some more crazy stuff too. It's gonna be old school. It's gonna be my first like old school style build with the big old. But what I'm probably gonna do is make some like what's that guy's name? Can Dig It Designs, how they do those wheels, they'll be like old school looking wheels, but they'll be like low profile, but the white wall is part of the wheel. I'm probably gonna make some wheels type stuff like that and put it on my 51, but it's gonna be like a modern old school.
Mm-hmm. It looks bad, dude. I was looking at that, being like, damn. I don't know. I just love like any car that gets chopped from those years. It's like, I'm like tripping out on that, the fabrication and everything that goes into it.
It's hard, man. I had to basically like cut the top up, chop it down, and just start. I didn't even go about it the pretty boy style, to where you section the roof into four splits. And I took the top, cut it off, and went in there. And I pretty much like, how would I say, I manhandled the plastic to where it's like I had to haul stuff out and cut this and split this right here to bend this back down, put some heat right here to shape this. I did a lot of stuff to it, but I never really knew that you're supposed to cut the top in four pieces and change geometries and all this kind of stuff. I just messed with it until I got it the right shape, which was harder. It was harder to do it that way.
No, yeah. Like, it looks clean, though. It looks tight. That's how I was like, I was like, man, I wonder when that car is going to come out, you know?
Yeah, it's gonna come out. So maybe it's gonna be next year. I see Brandywine. I see black base with silver flakes with Brandywine on top of that.
Nice. I like that that Monte Carlo, the one you customized the driver's side door. How you have that little door fold out, like open up. Also in the back, right there. That's cool. I never seen anything like that on a model, especially on a Monte Carlo.
That's some of the stuff that like your non-model friends, like I got a homeboy, he's a non-modeler, but he's technical, and he drove a Mazda RX-8, or RX-8, and it had the little third door on the back like that, and he was like, dude, he was watching me mess with the money, he was like, dude, you should put a third back door on that car, like my car and started laughing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, thanks for the idea, and I did it. And it actually came out dope.
Yeah. Now it looks tight.
I did it again. It's coming out again. I got it. I mean, well, people going to know, but anyway, but my 61 got it.
Mm-hmm.
For the build off.
Yeah. Okay. Hell yeah.
But this one got the passenger side the way it's intended to be, where it should have been on the other one, because it was really, think about it as a executive seat, to where you got one seat on one side, like a Rolls Royce or something, to where that seat kicks back, the front seat kicks forward. That was the premise of it, like for an executive seat in the back seat. But I didn't really do it. But the 61, I'm more doing that executive seat setup, to where you got like a laptop over there and all that kind of stuff, to where that's the boss's seat. And then you got this door back here, this suicide door that busts open, and you can scoot that front seat up. And now this is like, you know, that's the whole idea, making like a luxury seat set up in a car like that.
Yeah, man, that's tight. Man, how's that coming along, the whole process of that, of having that in the mix along with the other stuff you're working on?
Man, I've gotten to where if they're all coming along good. I got this car ready to resand one last time and go ahead and start laying tape and knock out the paint. And I got these 58s, they're all in primer. I actually got two of them in sealer. So I'm going to spray those tomorrow, and hopefully tomorrow, or at least get them prepped to spray, get them all on, mounted on little, you know, stands and mounts and stuff, so I can spray the next day. And then I plan on starting to lay tape for the 61 Monday.
Nice.
And so after those cars are done, I'm about to send off chrome too for the 61.
Mm-hmm.
And while those are done, while I'm waiting on chrome for everything, I'm going to pull out the Cadillacs and pull those back out and go ahead and put the windows and the chrome and all the final details on those and get when everything, it's going to all come together as one.
Yeah, that's cool. Man, I'm excited to see that, because I'm pretty sure you're going to bring that out to NNL West when you come out.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna bring my top, what I got. I'm going to bring the 61, because it's, you know, going to be the magazine, the contest car. I'm going to bring the Bed Dancer. I'm going to bring my 63. Have you seen the 63 I built? That burgundy one, it's brandy one, and it's got a chrome chassis. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah. You, like, the doors are open. You did, like, the center console. Convertible, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I made the...
You guys even put... Didn't you guys put the image of your car, like, on one of the flyers from an upcoming?
They did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you did. So, yeah, you probably seen that one. I'm bringing that one, and I'm going to bring... the mothership, because when I come to California, I think the mothership is staying there.
Oh, are you going to meet up with the owner?
Yeah. He told me to meet up. He actually said, let's go tipping in the mothership when I bring it out.
Oh, dude. Hell yeah. You got to.
Oh, yeah. When I do, I'm going to make sure there's a camera around.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better make a video. That would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
You guys meeting up and then just cruising. That's dope.
I got actually built Slim Thug's 59 Cadillac that they built on TV on Texas Metal. I built the replica of that just like his with the working airbag, you know, it lays out and everything. We talked on Instagram. He wants that car. So pretty much when people see in these cars, they want them. If I built a replica, they want it. I'm doing 50, one of these 58 Impalas I'm doing is two of them are going to a guy in Kansas City who has, you know, I'm replica. But then the other one is going to be 58 caliber, the 58 Impala with the belt-driven pumps.
Yeah. Like these cars that are, you know, they're going to, like, these people want them because it's like a replica of their car. Is it hard at first to let go, you know, like to make that decision? Or you're just kind of like, hey, like, dude, this is tight. You want this car that I created, you know, like based on a replica of your car.
No, it don't be hard to let them go, because I feel better that they are with the car, because mm-hmm. the car is going to get more eyes on it than it will with me. I'm only going to take it. I'm only going to have it in a box here, and I'm going to take it to a show, and it's going to be there for a day and back in the box. They're going to have it on display and have it out everywhere. So I'd rather them get it anyway.
That's true.
Plus, they're going to probably shout me out or something, you know. So
yeah, man, that's cool. I didn't really look at it that way. That's kind of cool because you know, yeah, you probably get a lot of messages, like even just from people that either build or don't even build, you know, just fans of your work who are like, how much for this, how much for that. And
oh yeah.
And it's like, I know that sometimes even though, you know, we spend, it's like an intimate moment. We're spending all this time and energy on these cars and it can get hard for some people to let them go. To be like, nah, I don't want to sell this car, or some people might offer you like a lot of money. And you're like, all right, take it, cool.
Yeah, man, it's crazy because the cars that I build like that, they're easy to let go. That's why I build my own cars, because the cars I build for myself, I'm not gonna sell them probably until it's time to renew the fleet. I ain't trying to collect my cars. I rather somebody else collect my cars. But that's why I take the cars to a show for a year before I let the owner. If I built the car and I know somebody else is going to get it, I'm going to tell them, hey, I'm going to build this car, but I'm going to keep it for a year because I'm going to put it on the show circuit for a year. I'm going to win some trophies with it, then I'm going to send it to you. And most people would be cool with it.
Yeah, that's tight. When you were doing that, the mothership, the 59, was the owner tripping out when he started to see it, like in those development stages and into the final piece of it done?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big C. He was, because somebody built one already. It was pretty cool. Did a pretty good job on it, you know, and I built two of them really. The first one I built, I sold it to somebody because when I put it together, the doors didn't close right. I sold it, but when I built this one, I sent him pictures of it, and he flipped out. He posted it on his Instagram a few times. I made a video of it, like hitting switches and driving back and forth, and he put it on his page. But yeah, he really wanted it. He ready for it. I told him as soon as it's done and it's ready for him, I'm gonna get it to him. I just don't want to have nothing like that get to somebody and it's not completely, you know, mm-hmm. they're fragile. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that every time he turned it on, if he want to play with it, it's going to work for him perfectly.
Yeah. That's bad. That's pretty cool. Because, yeah, that car is a famous car. And you see it active. Like, I've seen it at shows, even out in my area out here in Ventura. Mm-hmm. I've seen him with that car. And I've been with my friends, and they go, dude, see that 59 right there, dude? That's, like, one of the cleanest 59s right there. And then he starts, like, hopping it, and you're like, what the hell? Like, dude's crazy. Like, man, sick car.
I had made a post on one of the big low riding pages a while back, and I was like, I was making the joke, like, I want a petition to make the mothership low ride of the year. I said, because all them little Trailer Queen, over engraved, you know, built the stereo cars, y'all not low riding. This dude built a show car that's extremely beautiful, that's functional, and drives it and hops it. That's a lowrider. It's popular. People know it because they see it. That what makes a lowrider year to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people build these other cars for lowrider year for these points, but they're not getting points in the streets. People don't know how do people know the mothership over, you know, REM series, the big payback? They know the mothership more because they see it, and he drives it. He low rides it. That's how I feel about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's a cool name too, the mothership. Like,
mm-hmm.
like you see the size of a 59, and it's an impression when you see it in person.
And oh yeah,
you're like, dang, look at that thing, and it's hopping. Like,
it's crazy, man. He I love the way he drives that car, man. It's like he lets people see it in action. That's what I feel like low riders should be.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. I agree with you right there. Yeah, because he has that flow with it too when he's cruising and he's hitting it. Even like, if you guys haven't seen it in person, but if you go on YouTube and you just look it up. He'll come up on there. And even on his Instagram, yeah, you'll see videos, and it's just like, damn, on the freeway everywhere.
Oh, yeah, he drives that car, man. He clowns. It's powerful. It's got a 383 stroker in it, so it moves.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's pretty cool. But, yeah, definitely do a video when you guys meet up.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I'm going to make sure I do. I'll probably bring a 58 caliber out when I finish it, too. It's going to be crazy, too.
Mm-hmm. Man,
I'm doing all the pumps, 3D printed.
Man, a lot. There's a lot of projects, but I like your system, though, how you said you get into these waves in the process, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you got all these done, and then you bust out
right
with them, and then it's like, whoa, instead of just busting out with one, it's like you got multiple cars right there.
Yeah, man, I tried to say I was going to work on building faster so I can bring cars out faster, but it just takes a long time doing that stuff. Like, mm-hmm, paying one car might take a few weeks.
Yeah. No, that's true. And so 2020, you're going to be coming out here, NNL West. And then you guys have a show, right, in February?
Yep.
When you come back, it's like you got to come back within that week, I think. And then it's the other show in Texas.
Yeah, because I was complaining about how the show circuits are. I'm like the new loud mouth. Because, like, if I see something and I notice the game has changed, I'm like, we need to update how we do, you know, the models. It's like, yeah, it's cool going to the shows, the regular shows, but it's like, those are not lowrider shows. We build lowriders. I was like, we need a lowrider show. So I kept complaining about it. And AGK, we sponsoring, like, this lowrider show. And it's going to be pop contest, and, you know, it's going to be lowrider thing, not just like a car show for old people. It's going to be a actual lowrider show. It's fun with a DJ, you know, mm-hmm, like an actual car show, a real lowrider show, but for models.
Yeah, bring that atmosphere to it.
Yes.
Right there.
Yeah. And we're going to have, like, lowrider of the year trophy, you know, just for, it ain't got to be worldwide, but it might get people coming from all over the country because they know we're having a lowrider of the year trophy down here. It might get official. We never know. So I mm-hmm at least want to, you know, try some new stuff instead of the same format. It's boring. People lose interest. They don't want to come. It's all like clinical. No, we're going to have a bar and everything. So it's going to be cool.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. No, that's cool. Yeah, it's like, you're right. Sometimes, like, things like that, it needs to change, and it needs an update.
Yeah.
Make it more interesting.
We made them create a lowrider class back in the day in the 90s. We made them create, like, a sponsored dancing, a model car dance competition. We made them make all that stuff back then, and they still got it now. We made them do it. So, you know, we got to keep on innovating.
Yeah, and then later there's going to have to be like a category in for like the RC with the lowriders.
Yeah, I've been talking to Dick. He's been telling me he's been thinking about how to, you know, get that in there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be the only one, you know, with an easy steel trophy, but it's like, it would be cool to figure out a way to have that included as well.
Yeah, like, I don't know. What do you think? Maybe within a year or two, people will kind of figure it out. Because I feel like you're like, you guys are like, you and Jeffries are way advanced. Like, you guys are on another level. And it's just like, even with Lalo, you know, all you guys, it's just like, maybe in a year or two, you know, people start figuring things out.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot faster because Fab King's got a YouTube page now. And I'm giving away the secrets. So people are going to be able to watch my YouTube channel and see how I do it. I'm breaking down everything that I've done to a car. I'm breaking it down on a video. So you're going to go on my page and you're going to see me building a car that has remote control switches on it or something like that. I did a video to show how I put an LED switch and like wired it into the electronics of the car to where I had all these put lights in the doors and everything. I'm showing how it's done to where more people will be able to actually see how it's done and not have to try to figure it out, but they can copy it. So now we got more people participating. I don't care about the keeping it secret. That's already been, you know, technology came too far. We got 3D printers. We can make what we want to make. So I'm not gonna keep it secret. I'm just gonna do it first. Make sure I get known for it first. Then I'm gonna drop the knowledge on it.
Yeah, that's tight. No, yeah, because I have seen you do show a lot of stuff on your YouTube channel on there, and that's dope. That's what's up. Because yeah, people once they see it, then like you said, you know, it's like it'll make them participate in more things.
Yeah. I'm gonna be, you know, somebody else will attempt it. They might not be as good at it yet, but they're gonna keep trying. They're gonna get better. Then one day they might come and beat you. They might beat me. You know what I'm saying? Because I gave Jerry a run for his money. It was like he was the only one with the RC stuff with a bed. Then bam, all of a sudden, this dude in Texas built a bed dancing truck that drives too. What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like,
no, yeah, and that's when things start to get more exciting, when you start getting more people, more players involved. Like, oh, look at me now, I'm busting out, and it's like, oh,
yeah,
what?
Exactly.
Back to the drawing board. All right, like, let me see what I'm gonna bust out next.
Yeah, but by the time I let you see what I'm doing something new.
Mm-hmm.
So you see this? Because I don't already now. I'm figuring out how to make them do this. You know, just like how Jerry's do. By the time you catch up to what he did 5 years ago, he got something that he about to not bring out for another 5 years or something. That's how it is. So it's like,
No, yeah. That's cool, though. Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome. Like, and keep us all updated, too, with the YouTube videos and even on Instagram, too, with the progress pictures, because that's definitely inspiring. Not just for myself, but a lot of people that follow you that are fans of your work.
Man, appreciate it, man. Most definitely. The only reason why I'm not posting on my Instagram right now is because I'm doing that dedicated thing, and it's supposed to be like a hush-hush builds. So I just ain't posting all the stuff, but that car is crazy. But and then the 58, he wants to see a bunch of primer peaks. So once I get this car back, I'm going to come back and post all the build pics from it on Instagram and all that stuff. So I'm going to get back, you know, live on there again with a live post soon.
Nah, hell yeah. That's cool. Well, hey, Tony, it was awesome talking to you. Thank you for being part of this, the Scale Riders podcast. This was episode 96.
Thanks, man. I enjoyed it. Thanks for letting me get out here and nerd out and talk about all the stuff that don't nobody else right here want to listen to.
Not yet. I'll also post up your link too to your YouTube channel, and also your Instagram as well.
Thank you very much. Everybody come check it out. Learn something. Critique whatever you like to do. Ask questions out here.
Yeah, definitely. Cool, man. Well, I'll let you go. Have a good night. Hope it's not too late over there. And because I know you're like a couple hours, so.
It's a few minutes to midnight, but I'm just really up chilling.
Yeah, all right. That's cool. And, let's keep in touch and have a good night.
All right, you too, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right, man. Peace.
All right. Peace.